on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and congratulations on making it to the end of the week. My name is Luke Guerrero, and today is Friday, June 21st, 2024, which not only marks the second to last Friday of June and the second to last Friday of Q2 in the first half of 2024, but also the first day of summer. So for all of those that love summer as much as I do and are looking forward to get out into the sun, we made it. Now, aside from the weather, which certainly you can tell I'm very, very excited about, I'm also excited about the show today, where we'll be discussing some very interesting topics. And hopefully, you know, I don't want to sound too corny when I say this. I don't want to sound like Time Magazine's 2006 cover where they said the person of the year is you. But honestly, it's true. You are the most important part of the show because I need to know what you want to know. So feel free to call in anytime over the next hour or 7 days a week at 888-99-CHART. Now, in a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics, but after we answer our first caller question now.
Hey, how's it going, Luke and Justin? This is Jason from Atlanta. I was calling regarding Atlas Energy Solutions, ticker symbol is AESI. I have a small position right now, but with oil, being that they want to produce more oil, you know, to keep the price low, I was wondering if this was a good time to get into this thing. So I'd like to know your opinion on it. Thanks.
Okay, so ticker AESI, Atlas Energy Solutions, is a proppant logistics company. And you may be asking yourself, what is that? Well, let's take a step back and talk about the U.S. oil industry. So I think around 2018, the United States became the largest producer of oil in the planet. And most people don't realize that because there's a lot of, let's say, lies out there about how much oil we're producing in the United States. But we are the largest oil producer on the planet. We passed Saudi Arabia in 2018. And the reason why we were able to do that is because companies like this, and because this is a large part of what goes into fracking. And so as we move forward and we keep trying to secure that energy independence that is so important to our national security and important to our economy, companies like this are going to be instrumental parts of that advantage. And so they have a geographical advantage. They control the largest sand resource in West Texas. That's certainly good for this company. And it's also the largest proppant producer in North America. So that really uniquely positions it for oil production going forward. So let's take a look. So the company went public in March. They made in March of 23. They actually made money before they ever went public, which is good. And I think if you were listening a couple days ago, I mentioned typically, you don't want to invest in IPOs within the first 6 months. I'm actually going to extend that to a year because historically speaking, IPOs tend to underperform in the first year. So we're past a year now, and the stock has done pretty decent for a new guy. It's up 10% in the past 52 weeks. It's up 12% year to date. Their sales, as you can see, from 2020 to 2023 exploded, and it's supposed to grow again pretty significantly in 2024. Now, their margins, fantastic. They had gangbusters margins back in 2022, 45%. Now it's kind of tempered back a little bit. It was 17.2% last year. It's supposed to be 17.3% this year. They actually paid a dividend, or they're projected to pay a dividend. They will pay a dividend in 2024, about 83 cents per share. And their earnings have been relatively flat, but I think a lot of that's going to have to do with the demand driven by oil pricing. So as cash flow is improving and net margins are improving, which we like, it's also important to note there's about 10% short interest out there. And I like to point that out because that tells you what market participants think about this name. And they're not always right. They're not always wrong. In this case, I think that this company is probably going to be a big part of, like I said, the energy independence of the United States. And they have some unique geographic advantages that, given that it's trading at a forward-looking PD of 7 and a price to book of 2, I think it's a perfectly good name to hold. It's a small cap, about $2 billion. So don't go crazy over there. There's certainly more risk in small caps, as we all know. But either way, AESI, Atlas Energy Solutions, and companies like it, I think are generally good names to hold. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. And our main focus point today is about buy now, pay later. Companies like Affirm, companies like Klarna, and how that could become a real problem for the U.S. economy. That's because there's currently no way for economists, regulators, analysts to even know how rapidly buy now, pay later debt is growing. So that could lead to some unforeseen economic consequences. So we'll talk about consumer debt, economic debt, and if buy now, pay later loans make sense to you. We'll also talk about how higher mortgage rates have been putting a strain on homeowners, or really people who want to buy homes. But it also provides interesting investment opportunities in the form of mortgage-backed securities and those higher yields. We'll also touch on how the month is almost over, but the S&P 500 has hit a lot of highs, but it's incredibly concentrated. And so what does that mean for a continued rally? What does that mean for risk associated with owning just that index? And what does that tell us investors more broadly? And lastly, should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about a trend that actually reversed this week, which I'll talk a little bit about today in terms of fund flows. But the previous 2 weeks, with the exception of this week, had really outflows in terms of equities across the market. Now, again, that trend reversed this week, but we'll talk about what that means in terms of investors' hesitancy to continue to ride this rally higher. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play. One on Southern Copper Corp. We get that one pretty frequently. And one on credit card debt. We also have some questions that came into our Invest Talk YouTube channel's comment section. And of course, you are welcome to call anytime. I love talking to you live at 888-99-CHART. They're headed into a short break. And on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the voice bank 24/7, 365. Or 366 in a leap year. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in Silicon Valley area, call now at 888-99-CHART.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about HME Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers,
if you're willing to take the risk,
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk,
with host and financial advisor Justin Klein,
and that volatility, go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
Invest Talk.
Ticker symbol THT.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk with more than 58 million downloads. Luke Guerrero is here now taking your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Now, U.S. stocks were, I would say, mostly mixed in what was a very quiet Friday trading on the back of really a quiet week. It was a short week, remember. So the Dow was up 4 basis points, S&P 500 down 16, NASDAQ down 18, and small caps, as measured by the Russell 2000, up 23 basis points. Regardless, the S&P 500 ended up with a modest weekly gain, up for, I think, eighth of the past 9 weeks. Underperformers included semis, semi-cap equipment, credit cards. Looks like home builders didn't do as well. Outperformers include biotech, my personal favorite, beauty products, aluminums, department stores. Gold was down 1.6%. Crude oil ended up 70 basis points, or rather down 70 basis points, though it's up 3.4% for the week. Overall, it seemed like momentum from artificial intelligence and semis were on the defensive. For the second straight session, NVIDIA snapping its 8-week winning streak. During that 8 weeks, it rallied 75%. Some discussion about near-term headwinds from overbought conditions, certainly. Looks like on the economic side, June S&P flash manufacturing PMIs beat. Not only did it beat, it was the highest since March and the third highest in the past 21 months. Employment looked stronger, and prices received and prices paid were both lower. Summing up the week on the bullish side, strong inflows. On the contrary to the past couple weeks, which hopefully we have time to talk about at the end of the show, as global equities saw more than $25 billion in the latest week, predominantly in growth stocks, tech stocks, which both saw record inflows, industrial production and flash PMIs surprised to the upside. What else happened? Record travel is expected over the next 9 days, July 4th week and summer, highlighting still resilient consumer demand. And mortgage rates fell for the third straight week to its lowest since April. Now, on the bearish side, NVIDIA's ascent to the most valuable triggered some comparisons to Cisco during the dot-com bubble. Certainly, it's not the most valuable company, public company on Earth anymore. More signs of growth slowdown, with retail sales increasing just 10 basis points month over month in May. And the two prior months were actually revised down by 40 basis points. Homebuilder sentiment fell to a six-month low. Housing starts fell to the slowest pace since June of 2020. And the CBO also raised its fiscal year federal budget deficit estimate by about 25% to $1.9 trillion. Therefore, the cumulative debt from 2025 to 2034 is projected to increase 10% to $22.1 trillion. Chump change. Not much money at all. Looking ahead to next week, we got PCI next Friday, which, as you'll recall, is the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation. Now, it's Friday. I don't think I have to remind anybody of that. Everybody loves Fridays. But Friday also means that our newest KPP Premium newsletter will come out tomorrow. In the KPP Insight section, we talked about treasury auctions. What is a treasury auction? What happens? Who can participate? Can you participate? What can we learn from the demand from treasury auctions? And what does it mean for the debt picture of the U.S. and for the economy as a whole? In the stock ideas section, we mentioned a hospitality company and a logistics company. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on incorporating cryptocurrency into your portfolio. Exciting. Now, if you're interested in learning more, learning what those names of those stocks are, or getting an in-depth and hopefully to you exciting lesson on treasury auctions, head over to investtalk.com and subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox every Saturday morning. Now, let's swing back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank to a question that came in earlier from Minnesota.
Hello, Justin and Luke. Long-time listener here from Minneapolis. I have a question for you gentlemen, hopefully you can help me out with, please. A while back here, when commodities and copper was really popular, I heard you guys talking about it a lot, and I don't know, maybe it still is today, but I purchased SCCO, Southern Copper, and I don't know if I bought it at the wrong time when it was too high or not. I got it in the 120s. Now it has fallen down to around 110 or so. My question is this still a good company to hang on to for the future? I believe it has dividends and it did have some growth and was doing quite well. Or is this something I should just cut my losses and let go and look for another place to put my money, maybe get out of this one stock and get more into a sector of energy funds or something like that, I guess? Please let me know. I'll be willing to listen on the show and look forward to hearing your feedback. Thank you. Have a great day.
So Southern Copper, SCCO, is one of the largest integrated copper mining companies in the world. And over the past 52 weeks, it's up 50%. Year to date, it's up 28%, but it's run down a little bit because in the past 3 months, it's only up about 8%. Today, it was down 1.2%. And sales revenue grew 7%. On a five-year annualized basis, margins have been improving. Used to be around 20%, now 24% last year, supposed to be 29% next year. It's a large cap company. It's a very large cap company, $86 billion. It's got $7 billion on debt, so it's not overly levered. Their cash flow has been, I would say, steady since about 2021, though there's been a little volatility there. And its relative strength, relative to the S&P 500, you can see over here over the past 5 years, has started to pick up again towards the beginning of this year. So I think what we have to think about is why do we like Southern Copper? Why do we like copper generally? And going back a couple decades, they used to call it Dr. Copper, right? Because with industrial demand increasing, copper was an indicator that demand was picking up because the price of copper would increase, which is certainly still the case in a way and could be what is driving short-term prices lower. But now copper has a new role, and copper's role is being one of the most important materials in renewable products. And so what used to be driven by industrial demand is now driven by a completely separate entity and completely separate reason as well. So the question then becomes, what is your time horizon? If you're trying to hold a name for 6 months, then maybe this isn't the right stock for you. But if you're a long-term holder of what I mentioned is one of the largest copper companies, the board just approved several projects that would add 176,000 tons to its output in 2027. and as much as 545,000 tons to its output by 2032, then certainly if you can hold for the long term, if you think that we are headed towards a more renewable future, which it seems like we are, then I have no problems. And in fact, I like Southern Copper and copper generally. So I think it's a good name. Maybe take the opportunity to dollar cost average a little bit, but I think in the long run, Southern Copper will perform well. Thanks for the call. Now, ready to tackle your finance and investment questions. Coming up, we'll listen to some that are recorded on the 24/7 Voice Bank and others that were left in the comment section of our YouTube. And remember, feel free to call anytime over the next 40 minutes at 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk. Luke Guerrero is here, taking your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Just going to dig into this focus point for today, which is about, if you recall, buy now, pay later debt, and how it could really become a problem for the U.S. economy. Currently, there's no way for economists, regulators, analysts to really know how rapidly the debt is growing. And so this is important because buy now, pay later services are increasingly, they're becoming increasingly popular among American consumers. In fact, nearly one quarter of Americans have used them in the past year. And this surge in popularity is reflected in the staggering 1,100% increase, 1,100 in buy now, pay later loans from 2019 to 2021. And that's according to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So it's a real source. Despite the growth, I would say the sector's transparency regarding its debt levels has remained pretty minimal. Wells Fargo, in December of 2023, highlighted the challenges of really even measuring the true scale of buy now, pay later debt. They call it phantom debt because of its elusive nature. Because the reality is that regulators and the public have really no grasp at all on the potential for defaults. And with the industry insisting that the sector is under control, with major buy now, pay later providers like Klarna and PayPal pointing to their low default rates and public data on loan issuances as overall evidence of the industry's health, I think that the lack of comprehensive monitoring tools remains a really important and significant issue. Without detailed oversight, it's challenging, sometimes impossible, to gauge the real impact of this debt on the financial system households. Currently, these companies don't routinely report to major credit card bureaus, which means the debts often don't even appear on consumer credit profiles unless they lead to bankruptcy. The lack of visibility complicates any regulatory efforts and financial planning for consumers. The industry is unique compared to traditional credit card products because the loans are tied to specific purchases. They're not revolving credit lines. And so the specificity can adversely affect credit scores, as each loan could appear as if a consumer has maxed out their credit, right? You're maxing out that specific line of credit, regardless of their actual financial behavior. So you can't really count it like you would most credit lines. So efforts are now underway within the industry to improve how these agencies score the activity. They want to more accurately reflect consumers' creditworthiness, which is healthy for the overall system, and really be able to judge what the actual risk is of the products themselves. Yet, changes are still on the horizon. There's a gap in the current understanding and management of this debt. And so the ongoing challenge for regulators, economists, the industry, needs to be to develop mechanisms that accurately track and report these activities to prevent potential economic instability stemming from unrecognized accumulations of off-book debt. Now, I hope you've heard by now, we certainly mention it all the time because we're really excited about it, that the InvestTalk podcast is now available in video form. And if you go over to our video and you watch it and you have a question and you leave your question in the comment section, we try and get to those as soon as they come in. So let's get to one right now on INFY. The question is, what do you think of Infosys Limited, ADR ticker INFY? Let me type that in and then I'll read the rest of the question. It's an Indian company, no debt, stable dividend, covered well in a sector I believe to be in growing demand. Is it a buy now or the dreaded thumbs down? Let's take a look. So Infosys, it's a IT company. And it's an IT company out of India. It looks like geographically, only 3% of its actual revenue comes out of India. 60% comes from North America, 25% from Europe, and 10% from the rest of the world. It's grown about 10% year over year, and it looks like that's been relatively consistent, though it's been pretty blocky in 2022 and beyond, which makes sense as a lot of work transitioned to work from home, and really the world got more dispersed in terms of its business operations. Now, take a look at its net margins. It's got improving margins, not pretty stable, actually, around the 18 to 19% range. Return on assets, return on equity, all look good. Let me see the cash flow. Well, that pulls up. Let's take a look at their relative valuation. 23 times forward-looking price earnings, 7 times book value. Looks a little bit expensive. Its relative strength is pretty much hit break even with the S&P 500 over the past 5 years. It pays a dividend, anywhere from 1% to 2% dividend yield. Have they been increasing that dividend? Yeah, pretty steadily. 23 cents back in 2019. It dropped a little bit, but then a steady increase year over year. 39 cents last year. Projected to be almost 60 cents at 59 cents this year. Cash flow, now that that's up, it looks like it's been steadily improving. We like cash flow lines that are up and to the right because those are the lifeblood of any company. Debt, as the commenter mentioned, is very limited. $1 billion worth of debt on a $75 billion market cap company. You know, overall, I think that generally a lot of names in this space tend to be a little overvalued. This one doesn't seem to be the case. It's trading at about its five-year averages in terms of book value and in terms of forward-looking PDE. Its long-term growth rate sits at about where its growth rate has been over the past 5 years. I certainly like that. Its cash flow is good. Its earnings have been improving. I like this name. I think it gives you exposure to the Indian market, though I will warn you that if you talk about exposure to a specific market, I would argue that you should be more concerned about revenue exposure. In this case, 60% in North America, 28% in Europe. So although the company is in India and this is an ADR, it's heavily exposed to the US and European market. So keep that in mind. If you want to get a pure play on an Indian name, I wouldn't say this is exactly the one. We're headed into a break. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into single family homes built for rent and homes under construction in the US. That's Monday, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero and ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
The weekend is here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Luke and Justin. I have something a little different today. I'm very low income. I make $16 an hour, which is a dollar over the minimum wage in Massachusetts. And I'm trying to figure out where to put my money. I have credit card debt, so I would like to get that paid off first. But my employer offers a one-for-one 401k match, up to 6%. So I could put 6% of what I make into my 401k, they'll match it. And that, of course, is 100% return on investment. But I also have this credit card debt. So I'm curious what you would do in this situation. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Well, certainly there's some things that matter that we don't know, right? How much, what's the dollar value of the debt? What is your usage of these credit cards, right? Credit cards can be a good thing in terms of the rewards that you can garner from normal spending. Should you spend less than you make? They can also be a necessity. Should there be an emergency that depletes all of your emergency savings, you don't have any other access to credit. But this is an important thing to know because credit card interest rates are incredibly high right now. And so if the credit card debt is nominally a lot, it could be the case that you're making these payments and you don't make any gains on actually paying it down. Now, if the debt is lower, such that you can contribute to your 401k, but also start to pay it down and make improvement on that credit, you actually can pay it down, then I would say max out that match. Because like you said, it's free dollars. If your employer is matching it one-to-one, which is a great match, you want to take in as much of that free money as you possibly can. But again, it's important that you don't just keep building and building and building and building this debt. I suspect, and I hope, that there are other parts that you can cut down on going out to eat, cut down on anything that isn't non-essential until you get the debt handled, the credit card debt handled. But certainly, up to that 6%, if it's possible that you can still make inroads on that debt, I would do that match first and then start to pay down that debt as soon as you possibly can. Thanks for the call. Speaking of debt, let's talk about mortgages. So high mortgage rates may be dampening the mood for home buyers and homeowners and would-be home buyers. But on the contrary, they offer a unique opportunity for investors through mortgage bonds. Now, these bonds derive their yield from pools of individual home loans and are predominantly the realm of more advanced investors. And a lot of people use them for collateral, the problem in 08. And government-backed options like those guaranteed by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, known as agency mortgage-backed securities, come with protection against credit risk of defaults, but introduce their own set of complexities. For investors willing to enter this market, agency MBS can be accessed through various investment vehicles. But selecting those that focus on newer higher rate home loan demands requires some additional diligence as well. Some funds target the most recent mortgages, right? Rates around 6 and 7%. So those are going to yield higher than longer term mortgages, or rather mortgages that are older and make up these products from years ago. But it's important to keep in mind that investing in mortgage bonds is not without its risks. Key among these is something we talked about either yesterday or on Tuesday, something that is prevalent right now within the Chinese market, and that is prepayment risk, the risk that homeowners will refinance their mortgages at lower rates or pay off the debt entirely early. That changes yields. Recall that we talked about this exact issue, like I said. And so Should rates drop and homeowners refinance? Yields drop as the lower rate mortgages have to replace those higher rate mortgages. So then you're not really exactly holding what you thought you were holding before. Now, despite these risks, if you actually look at spreads and premiums, the current spread premium, the additional yield over treasuries or even high-grade corporate bonds are honestly pretty generous. And the dynamics, the macro level, might also support a slower than expected rate of refinancing, particularly for first-time homebuyers or recent borrowers. Why? Well, for first-time homebuyers, they might not have the savings to pay it down. They might not have the credit history to refinance. But also there's a little psychological factor in there. A lot of homeowners who locked in rates at 6, 7% are well aware that 3 years ago, they were significantly lower, 2 and 3% during the pandemic. And so psychologically, they may say to themselves, oh, 5% low, but we're heading back to 2, which is not the case at all whatsoever. But they may think that. And so that might help some of these products stay afloat. Either way, for now, given the lack of spreads and corporate yields, MBSs may be attractive for some investors, but as always, know what you own, and as always, understand the risks. All right, looks like we're going to play another caller question that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke. Bill from Philadelphia. Wanted to call about NVIDIA, get your thoughts on valuation after the stock split. If this would be a good time to maybe pick up some shares, or if you think it's a little overbought and there could be a healthy pullback soon, or if you think now's a good time to, like I said, pick up some shares. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the company. I know it's about to have some killer and making strides and different highs every day. I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on it. Thank you.
Yeah, so NVIDIA, I don't think I have to tell anybody what company NVIDIA is. It's currently trading at a forward-looking PD of 43, which is about where it's been trading for quite some time. It's up almost 200% on the past year. It was, for a brief time, the world's largest publicly traded company. It's been down about, I think, actually 3 to 4% each day for the past couple of days. I mentioned earlier in the show, and I'll talk about later in the show, what that means for the S&P 500. But I talked about earlier how it's snapped its 8-week winning streak. And so here's my problem with this company. And again, I've said this before. I'm not perfect. I don't know everything. I could be completely wrong. But investing is a return and risk story. And an absolute fundamental, in my opinion, absolute fundamental revolution of artificial intelligence, where the only possible chips you can use are NVIDIA chips, is priced into this stock right now. It was categorically insane for me that NVIDIA, the producer of these chips, passed Microsoft, one of the largest purchasers of these chips. The supplier of the company that's incorporating them into their models was worth more than the company that's creating the models. And so, with the assumption that these chips are the only ones that'll work, that these broad, large models are even going to be more efficient than their smaller counterparts, and that the moat won't over time be whittled away, for me, means that there's a lot of risk here, and that the risk-adjusted return just is not there right now. Could this be the beginning of a larger pullback? Could be. Do I think this echoes Cisco from the dot-com era? Not exactly. But when you're looking at this company that has had increasing margins, massive revenue growth, 50, 60% profit margins, again, this is all at this point priced in my opinion, that there has to be a fundamental revolution that only the chips from NVIDIA can make happen. So I would say wait, could keep going up, but I think fundamentally speaking, its fundamental value is certainly not as much as any of the companies that are its only customers. Thanks for the call. Now, on Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let's throw some at you right now. The two-year treasury yield was 4.734%. For perspective, last week it was 4.694%. And over 2 years ago, it was 0.64%. The 10-year yield was 4.259% today. Last week, it was 4.217%. And 127 weeks back, that was 1.762%. Gold was priced at $2,317 per ounce. Last week, that was $2,334. And 121 weeks back, that was $1,806. The other metal, silver, today was $29.51 per ounce. 3 weeks back, that was $30.37. 114 weeks back, that number was $23.94. Oil was selling for $80.63 per barrel today. Last week, that was $78.16. 9 weeks back, that was $83.10. And 127 weeks back, that was $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.45 per gallon, same exact as last week. 4 weeks back, though, that was $3.60. Over a year ago, 55 weeks back, that was $3.56. In California, it was averaging $4.81 per gallon, down 6 cents from last week. 3 weeks back, that was $5.07. 34 weeks back, that was $5.32. And I hate to think about it, but 102 weeks ago, that was $5.87. For comparison, in Kansas today, gas was averaging $3.03 per gallon. My math tells me that is $1.78 less per gallon than gas in California. Looks like we got plenty of time before the next break, so let's play another caller question now.
Hello, this is Isaiah from Tennessee. I wanted to call about ADMA. It's a biologics group. I'm up about 105%. It's about 4% of my portfolio, but the last three quarters have been very good. The chart is really strong. I'm just trying to figure out whether to take some profits off this high or, you know, just let it ride. Would appreciate your help and any wisdom that you'd provide. Thank you.
So ADMA Biologics is a biotech company. They do what all biotech companies do. They issue a lot of shares. They've gone from 50 million shares outstanding to 200 million, 250 million almost in 5 years. They don't pay a dividend, and that's because they've never turned a profit. Now, they're supposed to turn a profit this year, projected to have 83 million in net income, which makes their net margin around 23.3%. They have no debt, and that's because they love to dilute shareholders and issue a bunch of shares. Now, they haven't done any share issuance. I think it's a tiny bit. They issued 25 million. In the past year, but compared to what it looked like back when they had 50 million, I guess they stopped a little bit. Their cash flow is finally positive, which is good. And so with the positive cash flow and with the making money for the first time, their stock price has rocketed 178% in the past 52 weeks. Most of that this year, it's up 143% year to date, though it started to come down a little bit because it's only up 77% over the past 3 months. You're up a lot. This is a tiny company, $2.6 billion. It's actually trading at exactly what its long-term price target is for everybody that covers it, though that's four brokers. You know how we feel about companies that don't make money. It looks like this is finally starting to make money, but I'd be concerned that if the stock price continues to rise too much, or not too much, but if it continues to rise, given where current valuations are, 24 times price to earnings, it might just issue new shares. I would. So, you know, sometimes you cut your wins a little bit, especially in names where the business model is prone to risk. And so here in this situation, 4% is not too crazy. I certainly wouldn't buy any more, but given that it's at its price target, I would start to trim it down a little bit. Thanks for the call. Looks like we have a live call from Hayward, a question about CMG. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it, and I want to ask your opinion as to about what price is a good price to buy it, because one reason I'm thinking of is they're going to split 50 for one, right?
Yeah, there's a split coming up. Keep going.
I don't know if that's good reason or not, but I want to get your opinion, please. What might be the good entry point here?
Of course. So CMG, for those of you who don't know, is Chipotle. I actually had Chipotle for the first time in like 6 years the other day. It was delicious. So that's a personal endorsement, not an InvestDoc endorsement of the burrito itself. But anyway, so their sales growth has been pretty good. 15% year over year for the past 5 years. You can see their relative strength from the S&P 500 over 5 years is great. They're up 52% in the past year. They've beaten the industry by 34.4% on an annualized basis. I think that There were some concerns about shrinkflation really hitting this company in terms of customers being upset, but the revenue growth says something else. Certainly, they've raised prices a little bit, but per unit sales still looks pretty great. Net margins have been improving. Overall, I think it's a pretty solid company. It's a little expensive for me. Forward-looking PDE is 52.7. Forward-looking price to book is 26.3. So with this strength, I would wait for it to come down a significant amount. And I mean even beyond its post-split price. If you listened to the show yesterday, we talked about the difference between share issuance and splits and reverse splits. Uh-huh. And so splitting a company shares doesn't do anything, right? It just is issuing more shares. Everybody holds the same amount as in terms of percentage. The price goes down. And so some people see that as, okay, this price is cheaper, therefore I can buy more shares. But does that make any sense? Not really, because there's no difference here. So could it, a stock split in the short term, make people buy more shares? Maybe, because behaviorally people act in very, very, very strange ways. I don't think a stock split in and of itself is a reason why you should purchase a company. But I do think that this is a great company that's had excellent sales growth. And because of that, especially in a time where a lot of people are cutting back and a lot of restaurants aren't doing as well, i.e. Red Lobster, though it had its own issues and that's closing. But there's certainly a lot of companies that are within the same category of this that are closing. I would wait for it to come down. Again, good name. Cash flow looks great. Profitability looks great in terms of improvements. Debt picture, very low. They're buying back shares. So yes to Chipotle, but no for right now. Thanks for the call. I do like Chipotle. Anyway, this is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal, and that is to help you achieve your financial freedom. And with that in mind, our work continues after this break, our final break, which means you should get your caller questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
I'm calling because I have a question about fully paid lending. I have my retirement account with Fidelity, and I received an email asking if I was interested or enrolling in their fully paid lending program. Trying to see what the cons are of doing this. I understand it can also be done in a non-retirement account, but then your dividends are no longer qualified dividends and turn into ordinary income. So I don't want to do that, but I was looking into doing it with my retirement account and seeing what you guys thought about enrolling in this program just to get a little extra yield on my holdings. If you could just share your thoughts on it. I'm not worried about Fidelity going out of business or going bankrupt. So are there any other cons with participating? Look forward to hearing your answer on the show. Thank you as always.
So fully paid lending, securities lending, I actually worked, helped manage our securities lending over at DFA when I worked there. And it's a great benefit. A lot of people don't know about this. So what is it? So securities lending is essentially you own something and somebody else wants to borrow it for one of two reasons. One of them, they want to short the stock. Another one is that there are arbitrage opportunities in terms of taxes. So there may be an international market where, as a foreign investor, you have to pay taxes on dividends, where a local investor would pay a lower tax rate. So you'd essentially lend out the security. They would pay you a little bit. You get the security dividend back. And so you'd get a little bit more than you would get otherwise, accruing for taxes. So you mentioned it correctly. One of the downsides is that qualified dividends are turned into non-qualified dividends. Now, sometimes when they manage securities lending programs, they will actually recall over dividend ex date, so such that the dividend isn't manufactured back to you and it remains qualified. But there are also certain types of securities you should always want to lend, regardless. REITs, REIT dividends are always non-qualified. Passive foreign investment company dividends are always non-qualified. Non-tax treaty country dividends are always non-qualified. So in that situation, it does depend on what type of security, what market of the security is, whether or not you would want it lent out in a non-retirement account regardless. But either way, I mean, you hit on the other part, which is counterparty risk in this situation. Back in the day when they would ask us about that at Dimensional, I would say, well, you know, our counterparty is Citibank. And if Citibank goes under, you got bigger problems than not getting your shares back. Same thing here. Fidelity's not going to go under. They might, but they're not going to. And so if Fidelity goes under, again, you have bigger worries than your securities lending. But either way, you really hit on the head the two things you should be concerned about with securities lending. Counterparty risk, there's not really much risk. Certainly, there's still risk there, but relatively lower. And turning qualified into non-qualified dividends. So I would say go for it. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head off to the weekend, I want to talk a little bit about how the U.S. stock market is divided. And that's because of NVIDIA's staggering success. The chipmaker has seen its value soar. As I mentioned, it briefly was the world's most valuable company, though it's come down a little bit. And all this has been really driven by the AI narrative and the demand for their chips. Conversely, the Russell 2000 small caps have shown no growth this year and is down 17% from its high as the S&P reaches high after high. And so this month alone, if you look within the S&P and you look deeper than just the top line, actually only 198 stocks out of the index's constituents managed to post gains at all. That just shows how narrow the breadth is of this rally. Traditionally, market wisdom suggests that broad participation, again called breadth, is indicative of a healthy market environment. So this over-reliance on a single stock or a handful of stocks magnifies the risk of not just investing in the stock itself, but the index that has relied so heavily on the stock's return for its success. And so whether it's due to a drop in chip demand or a shift in market dynamics or a shift of the perception of the importance of what artificial intelligence can do, there are some downsides you have to understand. If NVIDIA falters, certainly it will falter, but so will the index as well. And so while NVIDIA and a few others may have insulated the S&P from broader economic headwinds for now, investors may need to brace for a scenario where growth concerns return to the forefront, potentially leading to a more pronounced shift in market behavior and investment strategies. I'm Luke Guerrero. This completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and your family members about our free podcast downloads. You can get them on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. You can also watch in video form if you want to look at our faces. I don't know why you would, but you can. On our YouTube channel, just search InvestTalk with two T's. On Monday, Justin returns from vacation, and our work will continue. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening. And your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.